UK Wine Show, show number 192 for the 29th of January 2009. Lisa McGovern, Wines of Australia. G'day, and welcome to this week's UK Wine Show. My name's Chris Scott, and as the Australian wine industry gets ready to put their best foot forward for a huge trade tasting in London, this week we talk with Lisa McGovern, Head of Wine Australia, about what she sees as the future of the Australian wine industry. In the spotlight, we're looking at a book review, quotable quotes, as well as our usual mystery grape variety and news. Well, this week's been quite a good one for me. I've recorded three shows this week, two with Professor Chris Howe, who discovered the genetic parentage of Chardonnay. You may remember we talked about that just around Christmas time, I think. I spoke to another person called Paul Ferner, owner and manager of Waiter's Friend, one of the UK's most innovative wine equipment companies. And apart from that, I've been pretty much planning my trips to Australia and New Zealand and Hong Kong and New York as well in March. Thanks to all those who gave me some tips on where to visit and who to see. I still need a few more ideas, so if you've got some ideas, do let me know. And I appreciate those who've sent me the information. It's been fantastic. As I'll be in Hong Kong and New York and don't know anybody there really, if anybody's around and want to catch up for a beer or even a glass of wine to debate the local wine industry, I'll be quite keen to have a chat, at least on one of the nights while I'm in both those cities. So I'm going to be in Hong Kong in the beginning of March and New York towards the end of March. So drop me an email either with your recommendations on who I should go and visit in Hong Kong and New York, or if you want to catch up for a drink. My email address is chris.scott@3050.co.uk, or you can Twitter me at Winescriber. One of the grape varieties that are not grown in New York, or let alone Hong Kong or China, is this week's mystery grape variety. As usual, I'm going to give you two clues to work out what you think the grape variety is, one now and one just before the interview with Lisa. So let's have the first clue now. Our mystery Southern Italian variety makes rich, spicy wines and velvety wines that are easy to drink, but can also survive a bit of aging. It's often produced as a varietal wine, but also is blended with Cabernet Sauvignon and Syrah. Like most Italian wines, it's best with food, although I've had quite a few I can drink by themselves, thanks. The mystery grape is certainly not as familiar as, say, Chardonnay or Merlot, but this could change as the little-known indigenous grape of Sicily gains in popularity. Ponder that for a while, although, to be honest, I've been saying that about this grape variety for at least 7 years, and it hasn't really got a huge amount of traction since then. But have we think about that, because next up we've got the news with Jane.
Thanks, Chris. New Yorkers could see a change in the way wine is sold. Proposals by the state's governor permitting sales of wine in supermarkets, grocers and convenience stores are approved. The move has been proposed in order to help alleviate a $7.4 billion deficit in the budget in 2010-11 by developing the state's wine industry. Under current regulations, wine can currently only be sold in licensed liquor stores. As a concession, the governor is proposing to allow liquor stores to own multiple stores instead of just one, let them sell wine to restaurants and bars, and to band them together to increase volume purchasing power and seek lower prices from suppliers. Currently, 35 of the 50 states, including California and Washington State, allow supermarket wine sales. But similar bills to permit wine sales outside of liquor stores in New York were defeated in 2009 and 1984.
Well, New York is looking to sell more cheap booze to get them more cash. This is the age of responsible drinking, and it appears that New York are looking to go backwards. If you are in the trade in New York, all I can say is oppose it. The UK experience of supermarkets is that they squeeze value out of every corner of the industry, giving good bargains to their customers, but they even sell alcohol as a loss leader so they can sell more toilet paper. Is that really what we want for the wine industry, to be a second-rate thing to toilet paper? If New York wants to destroy specialist independent sector, promote problem drinking and reduce consumer satisfaction while driving many companies to bankruptcy and reduce the range of wines available, and the only ones that are left are big brands that can pay the supermarkets money to have their wines shown in their shelves, then go ahead. Otherwise, you'll need to look at this as an attempt to increase sales and associated problems as a cheap populist way of increasing revenues for the state. Bit of a rant there, but what's next, Jane?
Well, new research released by Vinexpo suggests that Asia's wine consumption will grow by 25% in the next 5 years. That's five times faster than in the rest of the world and equates to around an extra 1.3 billion litres of wine. The figures were compiled by the International Wine and Spirit Record for Vinexpo, which will be staging its next wine exhibition, Vinexpo Asia Pacific, in Hong Kong in May. In contrast, wine consumption in Europe is expected to fall slightly over 5 years, although the United States is forecast to grow by 7-8%. Globally, the growth is predicted to be 3.6%.
3.6% growth globally and a shift to consumption away from Europe is an interesting prospect. But let's put it in perspective. Another way to put it is if there's 25% increase in volume gives you 1.3 billion increase, then the total sales are going to be around 5.2 billion litres, which for a population of 4.2 billion works out to be about 1.2 litres per person. If you compare that to around the 50 litres of consumption for France, 35 for Spain and 17 for the UK, Asia has a long way to go. But all this wine will help the gluts around the world, but the Aussies are taking the bull by the horn. What's going on there, Jane?
A new initiative's been launched in Australia to help producers evaluate the viability of their vineyards and encourage some of them to grub up vines. Australia is facing its worst ever grape glut, with at least 20% of vineyards surplus to requirements. The tools include a VineBiz program to determine vineyard profitability, as well as an upgraded Deloitte's Ready Reckoner to access wine profitability by market, channel and price point. They will be available from January the 30th via the Grape and Wine Research and Development Corporation. That's it from me this week, but don't forget to check out our website 3050.co.uk to get these stories in full.
Cheers, Jane. Wine oversupply has put downward pressure on grape and wine prices in Australia for quite a while now. But the commodity nature of the Aussie economy means that the dollar is still high and likely to stay high, which means that wines are relatively quite expensive compared to maybe 8 years ago. The government announced another initiative earlier this week in that they're looking to reduce the tax incentives to plant uneconomic vines in the desert. At the moment, there's loads of tax incentives to plant more vines in uneconomic places. Once those tax incentives are gone, Australia has a chance to rejig its industry. And later, Lisa is going to be talking to us about her views on the Australian wine industry in the interview. But next up, we have the spotlight. This week, we're looking at our book review. And the book is, quotable quotes, The Wine Lovers by Magpie Books. Strangely for a book, it doesn't seem to have an author to attribute to the book. But given it's a series of quotes of other people, it's probably a bit strange to put an author on there anyway. The book does what it says. It's a series of quotations from the great witty quips to some that you need to ask, why is it in here? As a person who spent quite a few years now digging around the internet looking for my weekly quote in the podcast, I received this book as a Christmas present and I was pleasantly surprised. The book has many quotes I've read before, but some excellent new gems that I've never heard of. It's organised into 12 chapters titled Drunkenness, Good Health, The Evil of Drink, Wine Buffs, Wine, Woman and Song, Champagne, The Drink of Gods, Reflections, Civilizations, Philosophers and Poets, In Vino Vertes, The Noble Vine, and finally, Toasts and Ditties. Quite a few headings and quite a few quotes. Most of the quotes are fairly old though. The most recent quote I could find in the book was 2004, and before that, the next most recent was 1992. So it didn't have any of those great ones from Jancis about Chardonnay being the tart of all grapes or anything like that. Most of the quotes seem to come from around the 15th to 19th centuries, as well as the Bible as well. I suppose this saves any issues with copyright, although strangely the front of the book says it is all under copyright. I guess I don't understand copyright laws, but there's a lot of things I don't understand. The age of some of the quotes means that they do lose a bit of context, and some proverbs, once translated, either, I hope, loses a rhyming or meaning or both. Although they do provide an off-center insight into different cultural views of wine from these proverbs. All said though, I need a new quote each week, and the book has supplanted my rather messy Word document I've been keeping and managing all my quotes in. To most people, it makes an interesting coffee table book, easy enough to dip into and out of, it will. I think its most useful use though is as a present for someone who you're not quite sure what to get and they're a bit of a wine buff. Interesting, yes, but I don't believe the quotes are all that well selected, and I think some of them are a bit dated. And in the end, I rated this book 78 out of 100, which is the lowest ranking I've given any book in this book review so far. But I think if you're looking for a book to give to a wine buff and you can't think what to get them, this is not a bad book. And I certainly appreciated it when I got it for Christmas. If you are a bit of a wine geek, then you may have already an idea of what this week's mystery grape variety is from Sicily. But the next set of clues should help you out quite a bit. So, the wine grape is literally the black grape of Evola, and it's Sicily's premier native grape. Evola is a wine-growing village in southern Sicily, where the variety evolved through the selection by vine growers centuries ago. And from there, it spread throughout the island. As recently as the 1980s, plantings were in decline in Sicily, and many growers switching to more international grape varieties. But now it's coming back as the grape earns a reputation in its own right. Okay, that pretty much ends the last clue for this week's mystery grape variety. If you're not sure what it is, I think I gave you a fairly hefty clue at the start. But I'll tell you what it is after the interview, which is coming up next with Lisa McGovern. Lisa heads up Wine Australia, and I know Lisa quite well. And when I first started running wine tasting at 3050, she came and joined us and ran quite a few tastings for us. So it goes to show what great people we have working for us at 3050. Anyway, let's have a talk to Lisa about what she thinks the future of Australian wine is. Hi, I'm here with Lisa McGovern from Wines Australia.
I'm great, Chris. How are you?
Do you want to describe what your role is? Because you're a bigwig in Wines Australia now.
Yep, I look after Wines Australia and I'm the director there and look after UK, Ireland and Europe.
That's Europe as well.
Yeah. In my spare time, I cover Europe as well.
Excellent. That's a long way to go, isn't it?
We're doing some tastings over there, but a lot of our activity this year has been in the UK. So it's trade promotion, consumer promotion, obviously like the wine show that we're at this week, and also talking to the press about the fantastic wines that Australia are making at the moment.
New to the role. How long have you been with?
6 months, yeah.
6 months, so still quite early days. Have you got your hand on the Aussies yet?
Well, I've had my hands on the Aussies before,
to
speak. Having worked with Lindemans and Rosemount and Penfold, so yeah, it's great to be back working with Australia.
Excellent, excellent. How are you getting on with the Aussies? Because they are a fickle bunch of people.
Well, coming from a Kiwi, I guess you would say that, wouldn't you, Chris?
I would.
It's great. I think there's some really passionate winemakers out there, some really exciting things happening. I think it's about getting those stories out to all of the relevant audiences and really showing what's happening with Australia at the moment.
What is happening with Australia at the moment?
I think what's interesting and what we're certainly seeing a lot of interest from the trade and from consumers is finding out about new regions and also new varieties. We're doing a lot of promotion about the regions of Australia. We've got 64 GIs, so specific geographically nominated regions. So
GIs, geographical indicators?
Yes, yeah. So and which 85% of the wine has to come from that region. So new areas like Franklin River in Western Australia, also the Great Southern producing some amazing Rieslings. And then we've just recently done some promotion around Mornington Peninsula and also Tasmania in terms of Pinot Noir. There's a lot of exciting things happening.
Cool. Obviously, I've got to ask the question, how's the drought going?
Dry.
Actually,
no.
I've never known an Aussie to be dry. That's the funniest thing.
I was out there in August and actually they had quite a bit of rain, but obviously it's an ongoing problem and something that Australia is looking at how going forward to ensure that wine production out there is sustainable and profitable in terms of moving into new areas and how growers and producers, wineries themselves cope with diminishing water reserves and also the cost of water itself. Mm-hmm. And also from an ethical stroke environmental point of view in terms of how much water is needed and also the areas therefore that are going to be more suitable for production in the years to come.
The old Murray Darling is, it used to be the backbone of the Australian wine industry. It still really is in terms of volume. People talk about moving more to the coastal regions. Do you think the Murray Darling is still going to be a big powerhouse even with these new coastal regions coming in?
I don't have a crystal ball. So in terms of how long it's going to be sustainable and also in terms of whatever government regulation or state regulation may come in terms of redirection of water and whether wine is considered to be a primary need in that sense. So I guess it's really up for debate, and therefore I think the industry is, you know, and any producer will be looking at different alternatives and different ways of and different areas for producing wine. But it's still, obviously, there is the availability at the moment, but going forward, then new areas will be sought, or increasingly more different areas will be sought.
Wines Australia came up with the strategy Regional Heroes, mm-hmm. That you launched about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago?
I think it's about 2 years ago, and yeah, it's basically on the back of the Directions 2007 report, yeah.
And Regional Heroes started really focusing on individual producers, niche high-quality producers.
No, it's based on 15 different regions, and then varietals matched to those regions. So it's not producers, it's regions paired with varieties. So we're not saying, Margaret River Chardonnay or Mornington Peninsula Pinot Noir, it's taking what are starting to be the sort of the most well-known and the most highly regarded varieties from those regions. It's not saying that's what all the only region, the only varietal they make, but it's basically starting to drive an awareness of region and varietal match.
Okay. How does that fit in with this GI stuff? Because the GIs were quite they're almost foisted upon the Aussies part of their getting into the Europe. Have they been intermeshed at all, or are they quite separate in terms of strategies?
All of the regional heroes are specific GIs. So I guess it's really building on the GIs, but to go out and try and promote 64 GIs all at once would be far too complex. Mm-hmm. And whenever we're doing tastings now, we're not using all 15 regions all at once. It's about taking a number of regions so that you can show quite good comparisons and contrast the wines from specific regions. So Pinot Noir, for instance, from maybe three different states that pick up the three different regional heroes that we have within the programme. So it's starting to provide a framework for understanding regionality within Australia. And I think it's using the GI framework, but just making it not necessarily simplistic, but easy to understand as a starting point. And then people can, if they want to, move on from that.
Do you think Australia would have gone down the GI route had Europe sort of imposed, or not so much imposed, but made it easier to work within the European frameworks? My understanding of how the GIs worked is you wanted to get your wines into Europe, or keep your wines in Europe, and one of the requirements was to accept the appellation control labels in Europe. So you had to stop calling port, or Rutherglen port, and as a result, you effectively developed your own set of branding,
regional
branding.
Yeah,
was the fact that the Europeans have said, look, you can't.
I think it would have happened anyway. If that's a question I think you're asking, in terms of evolution of the Australian industry and new generations of winemakers coming, in any industry, not just the wine industry, it's about finding what's the next thing, what's the next level of complexity that winemakers can bring to a proposition. And regionality was, it had existed, but obviously maybe European, that regulation obviously helped it on its way. But I think it definitely would have happened irrespective.
You used to go to the supermarket and southeastern Australia was the wine that you purchased. It was from the region southeastern Australia, which is pretty much all of Australia. In terms of as a percentage, do you see it eroding? But how much do you see it eroding towards more specific regions like Yarra Valley or...
I think that's a much more of a long-term evolution. I don't know the figures precisely, but probably about 40% of Australia's production is coming from more specific GIs that people would recognise, i.e. as Yarra Valley or Adelaide Hills or the Barossa.
Yep.
So I think that, that is going to grow, definitely. But there will always... And again, obviously, we've talked earlier about in terms of water supply, but there will always be a backbone coming from, a broader appellation, Southeast Australia.
Wines Australia is funded by the big... Well, it's funded by everybody, but let's face it, it's the big boys who pay the most amount to it.
Yeah, but you say that, Chris. I think what's interesting is that there are a lot of, you know, you take the industry as a whole, there's 2,600 producers, okay? There are probably about four major producers within that. And it's the same with our membership in terms of, yes, we have about four very big producers, but then we have 50, you know, small boutique size and medium sized producers.
Do they all have the same voting rights? Like, if I'm Foster's, do I have the same voting rights as?
Well, we don't necessarily have voting rights in terms
of. How do you set strategy?
How do we set strategy in terms of? It's basically our strategy is come has flowed out of the Directions 2007 report. So it's about, I see very much our role in terms of maintaining and building awareness for our brand champions, so our big wineries, our big producers, Penfolds, Jacob's Creek, Hardy's, Wolf Glass, but really extending people's awareness of what Australia stands for, which is where Regional Heroes comes in, developing that awareness. It's not going to happen overnight, but we need to start showing people that I don't think you can talk about Australia in general terms anymore. It is so diverse in terms of what's happening, in terms of new varieties coming on stream, new regions, and that's the excitement, that's the beauty of the country as a wine producing area, and something that we want to encourage people to explore.
Yeah, innovation has always been a sort of watchword for the Aussies. They're certainly innovators,
yeah,
and they're not afraid to try things, which is always brilliant. You know, it's a fantastic thing. If we were sitting here in 10 years' time, what would you like to be talking about?
Wow, that's a very good question. I'd like to be talking about how people have embraced and seen Australia evolve, and increase a much more, a greater awareness of the fact that Australia can produce fantastic quality between £7 and £15. I'm not sure that overnight everybody's going to start buying wine at those price points, but if in 10 years time we've been able to increase a lot of people, or even, you know, 25% of the people that buy Australian wine today, considering that one in every five bottles of wine bought in the UK is Australian, if we can, you know, encourage a percentage of those people to trade up in their purchases and to discover regions like Mornington Peninsula, Orange, Great Southern, I would feel that I'd be pretty pleased with what myself and my team have done, and also all of the distributors in the UK.
Okay. One of the things Australia's always been quite strong in is ladders, you know, brand ladders. You know, you have an entry-level product, yeah, you have the next tier and the next tier up. To me, the concept of this Regional Heroes is about putting another ladder on top of there, mm-hmm, and people call it premiumization, which is almost a dirty word now in some categories. Do you think that this Regional Hero stuff is about just shifting the perception of quality and dragging up the perception of maybe some of the more basic wines that are produced? Or have I got the strategy wrong?
I don't know that dragging up the perception is maybe quite the word that I would use.
You're in PR.
I think it's extending. It's showing people, you know, in terms of, A, you've got people that know Australia in terms of maybe what they go in and buy in a supermarket and they see, you know, is very visible in terms of the brand champions. So, yeah, it's obviously to give them the opportunity to say, look, here's a regional proposition from Australia. Try this. Yes, it's a little bit more expensive, but then you can compare and contrast. It's also, I think, our role to bring people across, potentially from the old world, that have an understanding or maybe a more evolved understanding of regionality, and show them you know, the equivalents that they can buy from Australia in terms of, for instance, Pinot Noir or Cabernet from the Margaret River, and give them a comparison to what they may be buying from Bordeaux or from Burgundy.
Okay. One of the problems that, from my point of view anyway, that Australia has encountered is that they've produced wines at the budget level very well, and the wines, you know, at the price point that they produce, you know, the quality is good. But that if you're competing at that price level, things like exchange rates mean that consumers flow where the supermarkets point them. And you look at things like South Africa now. South Africa is starting to do very well. Their rand or their currency is quite weak. Australian currency is quite strong relative to, say, the pound, which means that you're seeing a movement in terms of where people are purchasing wine, because it's not necessarily about the premiumization of the wine. It's what the discounts that the supermarkets can get and how they're going to flog their wines. Are you worried, or do you worry that by maybe targeting too high a point, you've still got a lot of volume to shift, that you're going to just be sort of left out there with the South Africans or some other country coming in and copying what was a very effective model for Australia, while you're taking your eye off the ball and maybe moving, and currencies are moving against you. Everybody's catching up with Australia. Australia got well ahead of everybody, early on. But
sure. I think we have to be very sensitive to market conditions. We can't obviously control currency. That's out of our control. But at the same time, the industry has to be profitable. So in terms of making wine to a price point, is that long-term, a sustainable model for Australia would be the question I think we need to ask. I think it's really important that Australia has an entry point that is accessible for people coming into wine drinking, because it's where, the new generation or the next generation of wine drinkers, come in and discover Australia as a producing country. So doing things like the wine show, getting glasses in hands at, from wines, from supermarkets, from Tesco, from Sainsbury's is really important. So we need to keep fueling that. But I think also we need to encourage people to explore at higher price points within Australia and see comparative value. It's about having those two, the scales equally weighted, and making sure that we're bringing in new people to the category as much as extending the knowledge of people that are already there.
I was talking to David Cox from New Zealand Wine Growers earlier today, and they had what I would best describe as a savalanche last year. Their 08 crop was huge compared to previous years. 09 crop's going to be about the same.
Yeah.
And they've seen prices erode on New Zealand wines. They have dropped. That's because their supply-demand is out of balance. If Australia's supply and demand is out of balance at the moment, and you're seeing it's difficult to maintain higher price points, if you're aiming to go for slightly more premium wines, your demand, your supply is going to have to contract quite a bit. Let's face it, the Aussie governments didn't do themselves any justice when they started giving people tax breaks for planting vineyards. Do you think that there's going to be a big correction in terms of vineyard size within Australia?
I think there needs to be a rationalisation. I think the whole industry, and we're seeing people exit from the industry, growers exit from the industry because it isn't a sustainable business for them, and there isn't as much demand from the larger companies. I think there needs to be, some people would quote that currently it's 20% in terms of, we need to pull back by about 20%. And it is finding that balance of sustainable and profitable production, but still it's really important to have, a relative entry point that people can come into the category with. So, yeah, I wish I had a magic wand to be able to do it overnight, but Australia's enjoyed fantastic growth in the last 10 years. And I think it's done, it's done amazing things for the category of wine as a whole, in terms of bringing people into wine drinking,
and democratizing the quality.
Yeah, democratizing wine drinking and making it, okay to have a glass on a Friday night and not be embarrassed about wine drinking. And I think it's now, Australia is in that period of evolution of really kind of, realignment and finding, where is that. It's a fine balance in wine production. It's an agricultural product. We're all at the mercy of Mother Nature, and Mother Nature is doing some interesting things at the moment, as well as currency, as well as, a lot of external factors. So it'll be an interesting couple of years, but I wouldn't have taken the job if I wasn't excited about the potential and what's happening now and what I think is going to happen and is there to be talked about and enjoyed at the end of the day.
Okay, so what are the things as a wine consumer I should be keeping an eye out for in Australia?
I think exciting things, it's small, but I think it's going to grow, are things like varietals like Tempranillo. Also, I know Yolumba are doing some work with Vermentino, Verdello. I tasted a delicious Verdello from the Hunter Valley the other day.
I tasted a very average one from New Zealand.
Hey, 1-0 Australia.
It's the only one you'll get.
So different varieties, and also like these, I was talking about Rieslings from Great Southern, Mornington Peninsula, yeah, I fell in love with when I was out there. I just think there are, you know, and it's also broadening people's perceptions of Australia. You know, you can ski in Victoria. You can, you know, Australia is not just an amazing, beautiful sunset beach.
Certainly not Melbourne.
Well, Melbourne's great. Great for shopping. Yeah, so definitely in terms of exciting new varieties, and also in terms of this new young generation of winemakers, there's a lot of guys and girls, I would say women first. There's a lot of guys out there making amazing wines in their 20s, in their 30s that, you know, have travelled a lot, and they've also seen historically what Australia's done and obviously want to make their own mark. So they're going to bring something different to the equation and to the whole, you know, Australian proposition, which is fantastic and really exciting. And I think there's also the food culture in Australia is really advancing. Melbourne has a really diverse dining scene, as does Sydney and Adelaide, and that's encouraging more and more. And I would say, you know, Australia makes probably the best coffee, even better than the Kiwis in the world. You know, there's a fantastic food culture there, and that's only going to increase, you know, people's and winemakers' passion for what they do and sort of striving to make even better wines.
Can you recommend three wines?
No.
I know. Three wines that are generally available that you think represents where Australia is going now.
Okay. I'm going to do three maybe quite eclectic things. The Pusey Vale Prima Riesling. So that's a 9% alcohol Riesling. And I just think in terms of what people potentially may be looking for, slightly lower alcohol, but still with bags of flavour. Absolutely delicious wine.
Is it high in sugar, or they just managed to keep the ripeness down?
Good question. I can't remember how many grams per litre, but I tasted it and I thought, wow, that's delicious. Paxton Shiraz, so from McLaren Vale, they're biodynamic guys making fantastic wine.
We've had them on the show. It's Dave Paxton?
Dave Paxton, yeah. Some really interesting wines. So, God, we better take it out of South Australia, otherwise everybody else is going to hit me over the head. And not necessarily where Australia is going, but I think in terms of great value, we were pouring last night the Jacobs Creek Blanc de Blanc, and under a tenner and absolutely delicious. And you put it in a blind tasting, yeah, it would beat quite a few, or you'd be hard pressed to know that it wasn't bubbles from champagne.
Yeah, I've got a Jacobs Creek Pinot Noir, the fizz, in my fridge at home, which I bought because I've been meaning to try it for a long time and I haven't had a chance to. You never get to see it in the shows, so.
Okay.
But I'm going to have a drink of that later on.
Okay. Well, the sparkling, the Blanc de Blanc. Yeah, it's pretty good. Good indeed. So there you go. So you've got some Shiraz, you've got some sparkling, and you've got some Riesling.
Fantastic. All right then, Lisa. Thanks very much.
Pleasure. Thank you, Chris.
Cheers. That ends this week's interview. I hope you enjoyed it. Next week, we're going to be talking with Jamie Hutchinson, co-owner of London's relatively new but highly regarded wine store, The Sampler. We talk with him about wine awards that he's won and how he outcompeted the likes of Oddbins and the now defunct Threshers, his competitors in north of London. Speaking of competitors, how did you get on with that mystery grape? Bit of a tough one, but it was, of course, Nero d'Avola, the black grape of Avola. Here are the clues again. The grape variety Nero d'Avola is certainly not as familiar as Chardonnay or Merlot, but that could change as this little-known indigenous grape variety of Sicily gains in popularity. It literally means black grape of Avola and is Sicily's premier native grape. Avola is a wine-growing village in southern Sicily, where the variety evolved through selection by wine growers centuries ago, and from where it spread throughout the island. It makes rich, spicy, and velvety red wines that are easy to drink, but they can also age a bit. As recently as the 1980s, planting of Nero d'Avola declined in Sicily as many growers switched to international grape varieties. But now, Nero d'Avola is coming back as the grape earns a growing reputation on its own right. It's often produced as a varietal wine, but is also blended with Cabernet Sauvignon or Syrah. Like most Sicilian wines and Italian wines, Nero d'Avola is best with food. Okay, that pretty much ends this week's show. One last thing is this week's quote. It comes, of course, from Quotable Quotes, the book this week.
The quote is attributed to Ambrose Bierce from the book The Devil's Dictionary. Ambrose, an American editorialist, journalist and short story writer, as well as a satirist, wrote The Devil's Dictionary, a reinterpretation of terms in the English language, with lampooning and political doublespeak. So this week, it's Ambrose's take of the word connoisseur from The Devil's Dictionary. A connoisseur, a specialist who knows everything about something and nothing about anything else. Have a wee think about that. Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.